On this episode of Still Loading, we're tiny, we're toony, we're all a little loony. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval. Today on the show, I'm very excited because I have a returning guest, one of my favorite interviews that I did this year, but of all time as well. But we are not coming back on to interview him again because that'd be weird. Just covered the same ground we covered once before. But today on the show, I have Gabe Swaron, and we are going to be talking about Tiny Toon Adventures Buster's Hidden Treasure. Gabe, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you so much for agreeing to come back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Like I said, you were one of my favorite interviews on, and I don't know if I even mentioned on the episode, but after we recorded, we like bullshitted for like, what, like 3 hours or something like afterwards?
Yeah, it was a while. Yeah,
it was a long time. So I had to have you back on. Like it was just so much fun. So we are here, though, to talk about Tiny Toon Adventures Buster's Hidden Treasure, and I'm going to be having you on for more episodes. I don't know when. Well, obviously, our schedules are both nuts, especially yours. But the reason I wanted to have you back on is because you are an animation buff, at least in my eyes, compared to me, definitely. And there's a lot of video games based off of cartoons. For some reason in my head, I always kept thinking Felix the Cat. I know that's one, but like for some reason that's the one I couldn't get out of my head. But when we were trying to figure out like, oh, what game should we do, I was like, well, I know this one really well already. It's not something that I'm going to have to replay from scratch because I played it to death when I was a kid. And I loved this game. This was one of my favorite childhood games. Looking back on it, it has a lot of problems. It's an average game now. Like I think my nostalgia for it definitely outweighs the flaws that I see with it. But, you know, going into it without any nostalgia, it's a very average game, to say the least.
Yeah, it's a good game. I mean, I didn't have the nostalgia factor for it. I'm trying to think of like anything on the Genesis that I played back in the day that was based on a cartoon. And I don't think I did play anything. I played based on cartoons was on the NES, like all the Disney games, mostly like DuckTales and Chip and Dale for sure. Those are some of my favorite games, even though they are based on a cartoon, you know?
I want to have you back on to do Chip and Dale because even though actually the first time I did it, I think I did a pretty decent job. My friend who was on that episode, Jay, I thought him and I did pretty well. But that was when I was doing my 40 for 40 series where I covered 40 complete in the box NES games. And some of those episodes aren't great. I think that one's actually pretty good, but like I'm having a guest on to redo my Donkey Kong episode. I did Donkey Kong Classics. And not only did I really do that game a disservice, and I'm gonna rant against myself again when I do the episode when I redo that episode, but I barely talked. Donkey Kong Classics has the original Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. I didn't have enough to say at the time on it, so I also threw in Double Dragon. I covered all three of those games in 20 minutes. That is that's a crime. Like I should have been arrested for that. I did not give any of those games their due. And so I want to kind of rectify that. So to redo even some of the better ones from the 40 for 40 series, I've said it before, that series was me learning how to podcast. And you know, while you're always going to be learning, you're always going to be advancing and like learning more about something you've done a million times. But especially back then, I was so new. And that Donkey Kong episode, I'm very excited for my guest for that one. But I'm not going to say who that is just yet until I can get it recorded. And
it's Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong is your guest.
Yeah, I know, right? I wonder if, I was telling you off mic about Captain N. I wonder if I could get the voice actor of Donkey Kong from that.
Exactly.
Or just, okay. All right. So we're here to talk about Tiny Toon Adventures, Buster's Hidden Treasure. This was the first Tiny Toons game for the Sega Genesis / Mega Drive. There's others for on the NES and Super Nintendo. But this one is, I think it's only released on the Genesis. From what I can see, at least on Wikipedia, it was not released on any other platforms. It came out in North America first, actually, in March of 93. And in Europe, it came out in June later that year. And it was developed by Konami, published by Konami, and Konami's known for good games. And it's I thought it was a great game, and I still think it's pretty good. But before we talk about that, let's talk about its source material a little bit. So you know a lot more about Tiny Toons than I do. Like I even remember when we were talking off mic, our last recording, you started going into how it was created a little bit. So could you elaborate a bit on Tiny Toons, the show?
I don't know the inside scoop on how it was created, but I do know that it was the first Steven Spielberg, Warner Brothers, you know, co-production or partnership or whatever that is.
Yeah.
And I know a bunch of people that actually worked on the show. I've worked with them in my career since then. And it was like exciting times because that was like, I think pretty much that's what formed like that Warner Brothers unit. And then halfway through Tiny Toons, they half the unit like split off and did a Batman animated series. So the very first part of that cartoon was really cool because it was like Bruce Timm was on it and Paul Dini was writing. And it's that whole Tiny Toons team or Batman team before they left. So,
okay.
And they all came in on from working with John Kay on before that they were working on the Beanie and Cecil cartoon.
I don't think I've even heard of that.
Yeah, like there was Mighty Mouse. Like actually, probably everything formed from Mighty Mouse. Then Mighty Mouse finished or ended, or that there was controversy behind that. Then they all went on to work on Beanie and Cecil, and then that was canceled. And then a lot of those people all went over to work on Tiny Toons. So, like Ken Boyer, Bruce Timm, Eddie Fitzgerald, Mike Fontanelli, like all those guys are all they started on Mighty Mouse, and all eventually went up to Tiny Toons. You know.
So, okay,
I guess Ren and Stimpy between there too, because that was around the same time. So
did Bruce Timm work on Ren and Stimpy as what Bruce?
I don't think he did. I think I'd have to double check. I know that he did development work for like Ripping Friends, and he was working for Spumco during that time. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of his drawings for like Mighty Mouse and stuff. They're amazing. But I don't know if he worked on Ren and Stimpy actually. I'd have to look. I have a feeling he didn't. But I'd have to do a little research.
I can
see. Or ask him. I can always ask him too.
that's so freaking cool. Just being able to like just because I remember you saying before Spumco was like one of the reasons you got into animation. So that's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
That you've been able to work with them since. So Tiny Toons, the format of it though was kind of like what if you cram three Looney Tunes shorts and put it in together into one episode. And so they were not, it was completely episodic might not be the right term, but there was no overarching story. It's not like the three shorts tied into each other. It was just three shorts that all had some type of, you know, that were all just zany slapstick fun.
Yeah. And the setup was that like, the older characters are teaching the newer generation of cartoon characters how to be Looney Tunes, right?
I and love that.
They're going style. To Looney Tune. What is it like? Acme Looniversity.
Yeah.
And, like it was like two episodes in, and then they just like ditched that premise. It was just like then it was just cartoons basically after that.
I love that premise though. I remember when I was a kid watching it, I was really. I think it's that idea of having like a multiverse type of thing or like this connected universe. It's like, oh snap, Looney Tunes were part of this, you know, it's almost like a Donkey Kong thing, how Cranky Kong was the original Donkey Kong and then they passed down the torch to this new donkey. And it's a similar kind of idea, you know, but before Donkey Kong, where the old guard is passing it down to the new guard. And it all, you know, in all honesty, they pulled it off really well with Tiny Toons. Like it was definitely more geared towards kids than Looney Tunes was, but because weren't the Looney Tunes cartoons like more geared towards adults at the time?
Well, they were theatrical shorts, so they would just air before cartoon or before movies, and they would put adult jokes in them because the the parents were in this, in the theater at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. And like, so, some of that, it's all like pop culture references we don't know anymore, which kind of makes it weird and timeless. I always like those. And
but
it was just kind of the way the cartoons were made back then too. It was just more violent and just more raw. I don't know. It's, there was less, broadcast standards and practices and like stuff to make sure that, you know, people don't get sued if they watch it. And that, because that's how it is now. It's like very, very strict as far as what you can show, what you can't show.
Mm-hmm.
So Tiny Toons, like, it was one of those shows back in the day where they would order like a huge episode order right up front. So they did like 65 episodes, I think, was their first order in like a year or a year and a half or something. So that means like they were just pulling everybody off the street to basically do this cartoon, because there was just, there's just not enough people,
so much content, you know, to make.
Exactly. So it's like really crammed. And yeah, that's when TMS was in there too, like the Tokyo Movie Shin. They were doing awesome animation on the show. So I remember the one of the things I remember most about Tiny Toons is the They Might Be Giants videos. Like, that's, there was two songs they did, Istanbul, Not Constantinople, and what was the other one? Particle Man. Mm-hmm. And I've seen those since, just because like I'm a big They Might Be Giants fan. So it was cool to see that. I remember seeing that when it aired on in high school, and I was like, what is this band? This is amazing. I love this music. And that's how I found They Might Be Giants. I heard them on the radio before that, but I didn't know.
But you didn't know it was them. So you found them through Tiny Toons.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of awesome.
I remember like older kids in my school that day, they're like, they were talking like, well, I saw They Might Be Giants on Tiny Toons last night. That was really weird. And I'm like, who? Who is it? They Might Be Giants. What's that? And that was like, all right.
That was like the first, Tiny Toon Adventures was the proto Fortnite, where all the music acts got into the show.
Yeah, you know, I think it was because Warner Brothers like released that They Might Be Giants album, and they were probably doing some like cross promotion, but I don't care. Like, I love the fact that they, I know Bruce Timm like boarded those too. So it's like, that's why it's so good. They're so good. I love those two. The two segments are really good.
What do you, now, I don't know if you can say, cause it is more contemporary, but do you enjoy the new Looney Tunes stuff that's come out? Like their remake of the, you know, the 6 to 7 minute short style cartoons?
I do. I like it. I have a bunch of friends that worked on that. Some of the people from that show are working on our show too. And Pete's great. Like, Pete Brongard, the showrunner. He's awesome. Like, he did Uncle Grandpa right before this. He's awesome. It's a Cartoon Network show.
Okay.
And they finally let them make Looney Tunes the right way, as far as like no scripts. They didn't have any writers in there. They just had artists come up with gags, and they let them like be mean to each other and let it be violent. It's like, finally.
Was that how the original ones were?
Yeah. They had like a very rough outline, and then they would just go straight to the boards and come up with a bunch of gags. And they would have these sessions where they would just pitch out everything or pitch out ideas. There's shows like that being made now. Like, that's how Dexter's Lab was. That's how SpongeBob was. Not the new SpongeBob's, but they used to be like that. And there's still some shows being made. Like, I think a lot of the Cartoon Network structure is kind of like that. They get an outline, and then the board artists write it. They go off in pairs, and they do an 11-minute together. So,
and then I guess the writers of the show kind of fill in the gaps in between.
The writers might go over the script, like might go over it, but most of the time there aren't writers. It's just the writers write the outline, and then it goes to the board. Then the board is the script, you know. So
interesting. I did not know that. That's really fascinating.
It's a lost art. It's like, those are some of the most fun shows I ever worked on, because I worked on Dexter's Lab, and My Life as a Teenage Robot was like that, where it's like you get to write the dialogue. And Mucha Lucha, I worked on Mucha Lucha too, was we would just get, you know, four beat out, like a half page outline, and then we'd write the whole episode.
That's so cool.
So much fun. I love it.
And it probably allows for so much creativity from you guys. So it's like you don't feel constrained by the script. You can just kind of let it go. And there is still an outline, so there is some constraints. But that's really cool, though.
You could change it or fix it. I mean, you have free reign over it. It's, you know, because sometimes you get outlines that don't work. So you go talk to your boss and say, this is what I want to change. Okay, do it. And then you go and write all the dialogue and write all the jokes, and it's fun. You know, it's great.
That's so cool. That's really awesome.
That's how they were doing Looney Tunes back in the day, and I'm sure maybe there's some of that going on for Tiny Toons, but I don't know how the show was set up. I know that Animaniacs was all script driven. That's how our show is all script driven too. So
I mean, the writing is super strong in it. I'm not, and I, you know, I said it last time, but I'm not just saying that because you're on the show. I do actually enjoy the reboot.
I mean, we have our board artists like add stuff or add visual gags, that kind of stuff, but it's definitely, the original show was so script driven that we wanted to keep that same feel. So that's how we set it up the same.
That's really cool. So with Tiny Toons, do you remember any of the sketches that you liked from it? Because I remember when we talked last, you were a Tiny Toons fan initially when it came out, but then you kind of, that's when you kind of, I shouldn't say fell off from animation, but you didn't get into Animaniacs at the time. It was like Tiny Toons is where you kind of drew the line at the moment.
I remember reading about Tiny Toons, hearing the press about Tiny Toons, how much better the animation is. And I remember watching it and really liking it, but I remember some stuff. I remember like the first time you saw Buster and like what Bugs said about Buster. And like, I don't remember that many specific actual segments. I guess the musical stuff, I remember like all the songs I remember. I don't know. I remember after a while I'd watch it and I'd be like, man, there's so many Lucille Ball jokes in here that I don't know if I'm, this is for me, you know? and then I started Tiny watching Toons? And then, yeah, Tiny Toons. And then when Ren and Stimpy started, I was drawn to Ren and Stimpy. That was like, I was the right age where I was like older.
Mm-hmm.
I was in high school, so it was like perfect. It was like that almost pre-college Adult Swim before there's Adult Swim, you know, type of mm-hmm. audience, MTV audience, basically, you know. Felt more mature than Tiny Toons, you know.
I remember for me, since I am younger than you, so like for me, like Ren and Stimpy, I wasn't allowed to watch. I think I said that last time too, just because my parents are super, like super strict with that type of stuff. Ren and Stimpy was too vulgar. I mean, just to put it, I love my parents very dearly, but my mom was always a little bit too far into the, like remember in the 80s, there was the whole satanic panic thing with like, because like Christian parents were scared D&D was going to cause their children to summon the devil or stuff like that.
Yep.
I wasn't born then, so she didn't participate in it. But when I did play D&D, she still gets uncomfortable. She thinks it's going to like she still doesn't like the idea of it, but she understands that it's not what all that propaganda said it was. And with that in mind, when I was a kid, they were very nervous about me playing Pokemon because Pokemon involved and evolution was bad.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's crazy.
My parents are amazing and I love them so dearly. And I look back on it now as it's kind of funny. And that they still didn't stop me from playing Pokemon or even reading Harry Potter or something like that. It was more just kind of like my mom was very cautious about it. It's like, oh, I don't know about this. There's evolution and witchcraft. But then once she, you know, got used to it, she's like, okay, no, he's not going out and, you know, doing crazies. It was a weird time, but that was my parents. So Ren and Stimpy, like The Simpsons, believe it or not, fell under that category. I still, to this day, have only seen like 3 episodes of The Simpsons, and not because I can't watch it now, I just don't make time for it, but it was the same reason. I couldn't watch a lot of that stuff. Tiny Toon Adventures, you know, Looney Tunes, it was all above board with that. I could totally watch it. I remember there was one short, and I can't remember the name of it. I was actually looking at the episode list right now. I was trying to find it. And there's one that it's kind of like, it's their version of playing off of that short where Bugs Bunny has the, you know, the conductor who's an asshole to him. And Bugs is just screwing with him, ruining his symphony in the midst of everything. I forget what that short's called as well. This one, it's a children's guitarist. And he's got like, he actually kind of has your hairstyle a little bit, like with the ponytail in the back, but he's an asshole and you're not. But he can't, he's trying to sing these songs to kids, and Buster keeps like screwing with him. And the one gag that still gets me is he's singing a song like, you know, this is the sound that the duck makes or something like that. And he asked the kids to yell out, name an animal and I will sing about it. And Buster yells out giraffe. And so he just pauses, like, this is the sound that giraffe makes. And he just freezes because he can't figure it out. And I, as a kid, that went right over my head. But then watching it as an adult, I'm like, that's a really good joke. That's really funny. And so to this day, I even remember that as a kid, thinking it was like that episode, that short was funny. But I didn't get all the jokes until I was older. So that was a personal favorite of mine.
I remember watching what you did on your, what is it, the How I Spent My Summer Vacation. Mm-hmm. I remember watching that with my family and my brother, and I think we might even have it on videotape still too. But I remember watching that and loving that, and my friends and I would quote that and stuff, like, back in the day. I remember, like, Uncle Stinky, and I mean, it's basically like National Lampoon, but it's still so good. It's just, there's so many great gags and stuff in there.
I'm going to have to rewatch that, because I actually remember seeing that on TV as well and really enjoying it, but I don't remember any of it. It has been probably 20 plus years since I've seen it. The other short that I remember, though, is who was, I think it was like Plucky's cousin. It was a little tiny duck, or maybe it was Baby Plucky, maybe. The elevator go down the hole.
Oh yeah, that.
For some reason, like, I watched it as an adult, I'm like, oh, that's cute. But when I was a kid, it was the, like, I couldn't stop laughing. It was like Family Guy to me at the time. Well, Family Guy doesn't make me laugh. That's not the best example, but it was like, that was like the, I could not stop laughing at that for some reason. And I remember seeing, like, a little behind the scenes later on, that the kid who did the voice of Baby Plucky, like, started hitting puberty shortly after doing that. So they had, so they really had to fiddle with his voice to get it to fit with the character again.
Yeah, or recast. They always have to recast those young kids all the time.
I don't remember if they recast or not. That would make sense. But I don't remember anymore. And it's been a bit. But I thought that was really funny. And that kid was known for elevator go down the hole, or elevator.
Yeah, I bet.
Okay. So that's just a quick overview of Tiny Toon Adventures. And we kind of went over a bunch of other stuff too. But let's talk about the game. So with Tiny Toon Adventures, Buster's Hidden Treasure, the first thing I have to say is, literally until yesterday, I had no idea there was a story in this game. As a kid, I didn't know it. As an adult, I have a complete in-box copy of the game for the Sega, because I didn't even... So here, backstory. I didn't even own this as a kid. My neighbors had this game. My neighbors had a Sega Genesis, and I was obsessed with their Sega Genesis. I, in fact, to the point where that when my parents got me my N64 for Christmas, I was mad it wasn't a Sega Genesis, because that's how much I wanted the Sega as a kid. And they had Tiny Toon Adventures, Buster's Hidden Treasure. I didn't know that was the full name. I just knew it was Tiny Toons. And I remember playing it at their house and being obsessed with the game. For some reason, this game just captured something in my imagination that took years to, that very few other games at the time did. And it's still, like, I still love so much about it. And so I had no idea there's a story. I waited on the title screen until the credit, not the credits, until the opening animation went. But if I did, I don't remember doing it. And when I rebought the game years later and got a Sega Genesis for myself, I never looked at the manual and I never waited for that opening cutscene. So I still had no idea there was a story. So when I was doing research for this episode, it kind of laid out the whole story, and I went, oh my God, there's, like, that's what all this is about. That's why I'm fighting my friends. I had no idea that I thought the main villain was the doctor, like the scientist, the evil scientist, not Montana Max.
Yeah.
So I had no idea.
The story in the game that you probably never watched is, like, they're cleaning out a closet and they find a treasure map, right? Monty and Buster. And then Monty, like, steals it and teams up with the doctor, Gene Splicer.
Yes.
They hypnotize Buster's friends and kidnap all the girls.
A little sexist.
But then you got to rescue the princesses, which is so dumb, like, to me. But I guess that's the way it was.
Especially because Babs would not have, like, Babs is the final person you have to rescue. She would have escaped. If you paid attention to her character in the show, there's no way she would have taken that lying down.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're hypnotized. So, you know, when you fight them as bosses, they have that little chip in their head.
Whatever, yeah, you know, that's so true. But also, you're not fighting the girls. You're fighting all of your guy friends. And so all the girls are still captured. So I would assume that means Babs was not hypnotized.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, it's
not
just, the best. It's fine. I mean, they just needed a reason to make a Buster game, basically, right? Like, pretty I'm sure much. They started the game and then came up with the story.
100%. And so they find a treasure map, and Montana Max wants the treasure. But so then to get Buster to, like, to delay Buster from getting to the treasure so he can get to it first, he basically, like you said, brainwashes using some type of hat, like this tinfoil spiked hat thing that brainwashes all of his friends, and you have to fight them. Those are the bosses. Well, you have to fight Dr. Gene Splicer. Is it Gene Splicer, right?
Yeah, that's what it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you have to fight Dr. Splicer, bop him on the head a couple times, which I could never tell. I think he's kind of an androgynous character. I thought he was a woman for the longest time as a kid.
Yeah, he's an interesting design. I bet you he's based on a real person because it looks specific or something.
Was Gene Splicer in the show?
I remember him. I remember him in being in the show.
Okay. Maybe I just didn't remember.
I could be wrong, but I mean, it looked really familiar to me. I haven't watched the show since it aired, you know, but I'm sure he was in there.
Yeah, he is. And I just Googled a picture of him. He's in there. He doesn't look nearly as androgynous as he does in the game. Like the game, it's like it's very much up open to interpretation. In any case, so you have to bop Gene Splicer on the head a couple times. You have to bop him on the head a couple times to rescue your friends, and you just kind of progress through levels, and you beat up your friends, and then you eventually find the treasure and rescue Babs. But that's not the story is not important.
Yeah, I mean, but the story is weird though, because you, like, what is it? Let me see. I have my notes right here. I think it's by level 5, or no, world 3. They're basically, okay, so the way the game is laid out, there's 4 worlds. The middle of level 3, you find the treasure. You literally find the treasure in world 3. And Monty asks for the treasure, and Buster says, no way. You defeat Monty, and Monty says, give me the treasure if you ever want to see Babs again. And
it's a weird, like, their version of a plot twist, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, that Monty is up to no good. And that's there. You don't even know what happens to the treasure. Like, you don't know if Buster has it or Monty has it. It's really unclear at that point in the story. So by that level, basically, you found the treasure. You're done with the game.
I mean, if Buster really didn't, I mean, at least it shows that Buster cares about Babs, because he could have been like, he could have just yeeted off and be like, sorry, I got my treasure. See ya. And just left Babs. But Babs could have gotten out on her own. I know it would have been a cool thing. Buster gets the treasure. And then if you, like, it gets to the scene, like, if you want to see your friend Babs alive, or not alive, he wasn't that morbid, but if you want to get Babs back, then you have to, you know, give me the treasure. It should have cut to Babs, and then you play as Babs, and you meet at the very end, right after Montana Max says that, and she'll go, like, you rang, or something like that, and then you could have had, like, this really interesting boss fight with Buster and Babs fighting Montana. That would have been so cool. Sorry, I just thought about that.
I mean,
that
the right other now. Tiny Toons games, you could switch characters. I mean, I think it's the Game Boy one where you can switch characters because they have different abilities and stuff.
This is the only one I've really played.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. I mean, maybe I'm thinking of the Famicom one. I don't remember.
I mean, there's Buster Bust Loose for the Super Nintendo. I think that also might have been on the NES.
There's
I don't know
Tiny
all the different
adventures titles. for the NES, which I have that game, but I haven't played it for a long time.
I will see. Let me see what we have here. So you have there's two super early. The earliest Tiny Toon Adventures games are Tiny Toon Adventures for the NES, and then there's a Tiger Electronics one. also released the same year. There was a Tiger Electronics one. Then there's Tiny Toon Adventures Babs Big Break for the Game Boy. Then you have Cartoon Workshop for the NES, Tiny Toon Adventures 2 Trouble in Wacky Land for the NES. Buster Bust Loose is for the Super Nintendo. Then you have the one we're talking about today, Hidden Treasure. Tiny Toon Adventures 2 Montana's Movie Madness, which is also for the Game Boy. I would guess that like there's Tiny Toon Adventures for the NES and Tiny Toon Adventures for the Game Boy are two separate series. That's why there's two separate twos. I don't know. There was a Tiny Toon Adventures for the... Oh, it was canceled. It was going to be for the Jaguar. The Jaguar.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this game. There's like, a lot. I'm looking at a playthrough right now, and it's you can switch as different characters in the Tiny Toon Adventure for the NES. So, like, you can play as Plucky. He can... I think he could jump or fly a little bit. You know, so...
I have to check those out. I'll have to do more. The gameplay, we were talking off mic about it. It's kind of a cross between Sonic and Mario and Donkey Kong Country, but it doesn't quite hit the quality of all three of those. Like even with nostalgia talking for me, like I can admit that it doesn't quite hit that. Specifically the movement physics. I feel like the movement physics are very not player friendly. Would you agree?
You really have to get used to them because it. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to make it so you can run like Sonic and roll and slide like Donkey Kong Country, but the design isn't set up for that. Like, there's maybe a couple levels where you have to run and then slide or roll, you know. But I don't know. I mean, it's basically the way I played the game is I played it more like Mario, where I was just hopping through the whole game, and then I think it's around level 4, it's whatever, when you go to the Himalayas, there's one level where you can't get through the level. Like, you have to run through it. There's no other way of doing it,
and it's super I didn't play up to that point. I watched the playthrough. That looks hard, because you have to be constantly sprinting that whole time because there's something chasing you, right?
That's the different part. This is just like, yeah, I played the whole way through the game, like I beat it, and that part that I was talking about is, you know, when you're like come to a level and you jump on a platform and then it moves to the other direction, like you have to make sure that it's coming towards you and you have enough, you can actually land on it. But that level, the whole game up to that point, up to that level, you could just jump normally, but that one, you actually have to run to jump and hit that platform. And it was like, I thought the game was broken, honestly, cause I was just playing it normally. And, because it's like Sonic. Like, Sonic is awesome. Like, there's huge stretches where you can just, like, run through and it's fun. And there's not things stopping you. If you want to stop and, like, go a different route, that's cool. But Buster is, like, things actively stop you. Like, you run into a rake, like, go right to the face, which is fine. But, like, it's just a strange, like, design choice, you know? I mean, I can't... I'm like, making a game right now. I'm making a platformer, so I'm, like... looking at all this stuff and like looking what not to do. And I'm really like enjoying seeing why people made their choices or like why, you know, I could see that. I'm sure someone at some point said, make this like Sonic, because the sound effects are like Sonic. There's a part where you're like on a rock and it gets spit up by lava, like Sonic, like that. I mean, it's a lot like Sonic, you know.
Even
and
the
Donkey
visuals
Kong more
I would
like
say.
More like alternate exits, like Donkey Kong has the alternate exits like this game does, you know. So,
and then it even has like hidden levels like both Donkey Kong Country and Mario does, like there, but it's not in every level. There's like hidden, there's basically like the little Tiny Toon Adventures rainbow circles randomly strewn throughout some of the levels, which I legit, until I watched the replay of it, forgot they existed. I remember them vividly from my childhood, but in some of my recent playthroughs, even like I played it as recently as last year, I didn't find them because I just completely forgot about them. And in speaking of other mechanics that like I, or like stuff that I legit learned yesterday, I didn't know there was a sliding mechanic, because I never, because running was such a waste of time, because you, like you said, you will sprint, and if an enemy doesn't hurt you, you'll run into a wall or a rock or a rake, or you'll trip over something. But in there, which as much as that's a problem, one thing I love about this game is how much attention to detail they put into all the character animations. Like Buster is so, and like it really fits the cartoon aesthetic. Like he feels like he would, in terms of his animations, it feels like what they were going for in the show. You know, he gets impatient and he stomps his foot, or the animation of like when he runs into a rake and he just kind of bounces back, or when he goes into a wall, even the sound effect that like go boom,
yeah,
sound effect of the wall.
The sprite work is amazing. Like my favorite is like when you crouch and crawl under something, he like grabs mm-hmm. his ears, and it's so cute and so appealing. It's so, there's so much charm in the game. I mean, that's Konami. It's straight up Konami. I mean, they're just so good at, their artists are so good. I was looking up like the actual dev team and like what else they've done. And
did more work than I did on this. Go on.
Well, a lot of the programmers worked on like NES stuff. So, and one person worked on like Life Force and Gradius, like shooters, you know? And then the graphics people, they worked on Poppin' Twinbee for the SNES. Okay. I don't know if you ever played that, but that's like super charming. It's kind of the same mechanic as this where you run but that one you can like actually shoot straight up in the air. Mm-hmm. And they also worked on the Animaniacs game for the SNES. So that's like that, you could see that too. Like you could tell that they probably went right from this right to that, you know?
And I love, like you're saying, the sprite work is gorgeous. Like I know we kind of jumped from gameplay to this, so we'll get back to more gameplay stuff, but like I really wanted to gush about the visuals of this game, because I think the look of all the different enemies and the landscapes, like I thought they did a really good job of the visual look of every level specifically. So there's like different, like you mentioned, there's different worlds. There's also almost like different zones within each world, because like the first area is kind of more hills, the second area, then you fight a boss, and then you play a couple levels in this hills area, you fight a boss, and then you play a couple levels in this forest area. And if you mm-hmm. notice, like the first level of the forest area, it kind of transitioned from hills to forest. There's like a nice little like, there's a nice transition, so it kind of makes it feel more like a real world thing. And there's a level that has a bunch of tree elevators that you kind of hop up and down. And I thought as a kid, that was my favorite level. I don't know what it was, but for some reason, just visually and the whole design of it is really cool. But to bring that also back to game design, it's a really weird choice to do that, because you're completely changing the format of the game. Because up until that point, you had a linear platformer, you know, you go left to right, and when you get to the right, there might be a hidden exit beforehand, but there is always a dodo at the end of the level. I guess we didn't mention that. That's how you exit the level. You touch Dodo the bird, and you leave the level.
Go Go Dodo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go Go Dodo. And
in this one, like a little portal, and you jump in the portal.
Mm-hmm. Once again, really fun animation, and it just kind of plays into the whole Tiny Toons aesthetic. I love Go-Go Dodo is such a fun character in the show too, because it's harkening back to that one time that Porky went to Dodo Land and you met Dodo there. And I guess, did Dodo appear in other cartoons besides that originally, or was it only that one Porky cartoon?
Porky and Wacky Land. I know there's two Porky and Wacky Land cartoons. There was the original one, and then there was the second one where they remade it in color. Later. Okay. I don't know if it was in more than that.
I'd have to look into it. But that was such a cool character because, real quick, I didn't even know this. The voice of Go-Go Dodo in the show was done by Frank Welker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knew? I had no idea.
Yeah, he's great.
Go-Go is the only member of the Tiny Toons cast to be a direct relative of one of the Looney Tunes characters. He is the son of the original Dodo from the 1938 Porky and Wacky Land, retroactively named Yo-Yo Dodo.
Yep, and it's like that character's little side note. It's all based on a cartoonist that Bob Clampett really liked called Milt Gross, and he was a big Milt Gross fan, so he made hit that was like his love letter to Milt Gross's comic strips.
Oh,
he did like, I forget Count Screwloose was the name of his comic strip that he used to make. And so, yeah, so that's where he came. That's where Gogo, I guess the Dodo came from, was based on, it was like Bob Clampett's love letter to Milgrose. So
that's so crazy. So who was Milgrose again?
He was a cartoonist. Did comics in the newspaper. And one of the comics he did was called Count Screwloose. And that's, you know, Bob Clampett was just a big fan. So he did Porky and Wacky Land, you know?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That I had no idea. That's a really interesting, that's really cool.
It's like super surreal. That cartoon's really cool.
Yeah. That's nuts. Dodo, I thought was such a fun character because that's such a deep pull for the time too. You know, like now a lot of people know who Dodo is, but I would argue Dodo became more popularized because of, like, in the current zeitgeist, I should say, more popularized because of this cartoon. Because at that time, like, it was literally in one cartoon from 1938.
Yeah,
and yeah. So to make that pull.
They remade it later in color too. So technically it was in two, but it's the same cartoon, you know? But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good idea in the game to use that character because he's magic or mysterious. Yeah.
Doesn't follow the rules of physics, even for cartoon physics. So
you were saying like the trees, right? Like that tree level was such a pain in the butt because it was a maze and this game is mean. This game is mean to you.
It's like a tough game.
Well, no, they're just mean. Like they'll set up a hill. You'll be running downhill, and then they'll have an enemy right off camera. Or they'll set up like you have to fall. It's like blind jumps. You fall down, and there's an enemy there. It's like they're just mean to you. It's like those cheap shots that, like, since this game was made, people avoid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just to make someone do a blind jump is like a big ask nowadays, you know, for a player. So, but this is like, you know, just the way it was back then.
You just have to hope that there's something there to catch your fall. But to their credit with the completely revamped design, like I said, like it's so weird from a design perspective to be like, let's have a stereotypical platformer, left to right movement, normal stuff. And now all of a sudden it's become more of a maze where you have to find your way out of this level. Mario does it well where it's still kind of like, when Mario does a maze, it's like it just takes you back to the left side of the screen again. So it's like you know where you're at again, and you just realize, okay, so now I'm in a loop. I have to figure out my way around this.
Yeah, or up, go straight up. Like, you know that it's like vertical, and you know the end is at the top. How do I get there? This one, you go all the way around, and then you have to go back inside it. Like, it's so awkward. early games, and that's the way they're made, you know?
What I was going to say was that the one thing, to give them a little credit for this, though, they put Dodo on, like, especially, I don't know if they do it for every one of these tree elevator maze levels, but the one I remember, they put Dodo literally on the same screen as the player at the start of level, but the player can't reach it, so when you see that, you're like, oh, Dodo isn't on the far right of the screen. He's right next to me. I have to figure out how to get to him. So they at least broadcast that to the player to be like, okay, he's right there. I know, at the very least, maybe there's another one at the end of the level, but I know that there is an endpoint right next to me. I just have to figure out how to get to it. So they did at least broadcast it, but it is still very weird to change up the gameplay format so drastically. And it's like the times that Mario does it is it's done in a castle usually, right? So it makes it feel like this is the setting of that level also makes sense why it would be more maze like because you're in a castle. If you don't know a castle and they're huge, it's going to be like a maze to you. In this, it's just all of a sudden we're in mazes.
I'm sure that's what their thinking was, because if you look at, that's the first world, right? So you go through four levels, you have your mini boss, and you go through four more levels, and that's the last of the last four levels, you know? So that's like the hardest one in the first world before you get the Calamity Coyote for the boss. So I guess that's their thinking, is like, well, it's like a Mario castle. This will be like a very strange maze in the woods, but it's a Mario castle.
I guess so. It's funny though, because, you know, like, I'm criticizing it now, but as a kid, that was legit my favorite level. I don't know why. I just, I, the idea of like these tree elevators just as a kid just captured my imagination. I'm like, how, I, even as a kid, I remember going outside afterwards and be like, how can I turn, I would look at trees and be like, how can I turn you into an elevator? I legit would like ponder that. I would try to think about how can I make this happen? Obviously nothing ever came to, or obviously nothing came to fruition for that, but it's something I always wanted to do and just never could do. I still, that's still a pipe dream of mine, like to get a giant tree house, right? Like from Treehouse Masters, and find a way to make a fake. I don't want to kill a tree to do this. Let's make a fake tree. And
there's an elevator inside the trunk.
Yeah. And just have an elevator inside the trunk to pull like a Swiss Family Robinson or something.
I do like the idea with the bosses in this game. I think it's a really cool idea that, you know, Gene Splicer is controlling the person you're fighting, but you can't hurt that. You can't hurt your friend. You can only hurt Gene Splicer. So I thought that was a really cool idea that your friend is the end, is the actual like weapon. And then when you hurt Gene Splicer, he runs off, and then you're, you know, then your friend is freed, which I thought was a really cool idea. I like that idea. And that's basically how all the bosses are. You fight all your friends. So those are all the mini bosses and bosses.
Until you fight Montana Max, then you fight him directly. Like he is a weapon, and like, well, he's in a suit of armor or whatever. Though the other boss that was Elmira, that's the level I was thinking of, where you have to run away from Elmira. And that's, watching that play through that, I'm like, oh my god, this looks really hard.
Well, I like when I was playing it, I figured out that you could actually turn around, because like the whole game they're mean to you, right? So as soon as you run into a wall in that game, Elmira gets you. Like there's no other way around it. And if you run too fast, you gain distance from Elmira, but it pans too quickly and you can't react. Like you literally can't react fast enough because you're too far to the right of the screen.
Unless you have the whole thing memorized.
Well, even if you do, it's like there's jumps in there that are almost impossible if you even have it memorized. It's hard to like even judge because there's no graphic way to know where to land and where to jump over edges and stuff. So what I did is like I would just not run too far ahead and then jump over her and she'd turn around. So
okay, so you
would actually turn around so you could actually react. And that level's not that long either. It's very short. I mean, you can memorize it, but there are there's a part at the end where you just can't get past it. I couldn't anyway. And so I just did the turnaround thing, and that's why I got through it.
That makes the playthrough I saw, it must have either been like one of the task bot playthroughs, or it was just someone who has the level memorized so much, because he just sped through it, like literally never stopped hitting right. He just timed the jump. And I think some of it had to have been tasked, or maybe the video was like pieced together, because there is times where I'm like, I don't know how he made that jump, because it looks like he didn't land on the edge. It looks like he like just landed just a bit to the left of it. And then all of a sudden he like maybe he still hit the collision, so it punched him back up to the top of it. I don't know, but it was interesting nonetheless. But I think one of the other cool little mechanics that I really liked was there was a lot of exploration within each of the levels, like, and there's no time limit, so you don't feel rushed, so you can really go around, and there's a lot of hidden secrets in these levels. There's a lot of like hidden extra lives. There's a lot of hidden extra hearts for if you get hit. I also like that the bells upgrade your hearts, so you can have a maximum of 5 hearts, so you can take 5 hits.
But as soon as you die, you lose that power. Like,
yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it is a mean game. Like I don't know if it's because of that whole, like maybe they went and rebalanced it. Maybe they broke it a little bit when they brought it over. I'd have to play the Japanese version to see if it's different.
It never came out in Japan.
Oh, it didn't? It never did?
No. This was a North America and Europe release only.
It's weird, because it's like, it feels to me like, I mean, I could see how they want you to beat the game, because they give you endless continues, and they also give you a password feature to get through it. But when you get to the last level, they won't let you. If you get a game over, you have to continue from the beginning of the whole last world in one continue. And it's a real pain in the butt. And I was
a very Ninja Gaiden style thing.
Well, it's Konami, you know, it's like, you know, like Castlevania 3, like they take out that last checkpoint when they released it over here, and it just made it impossible at the end. But
I don't,
stupid.
Yeah.
It, So I was like, at that point, I was like, I'm going to use a save state. I'm going to get up like halfway through and at least use the save state here, you know? Because at the end, there's another crazier maze. There's a door maze where, you know, it's like those levels where you go through a door and you got to figure out which door to go through. But every single door except the right door puts you back to the beginning of the level. And it sucks. It's like, that stuff is not fun. Like, it's not fun. And it's like, it's not even challenging. It's more like, okay, I got to map this out. I have to figure out the way through this, you know? And it's not.
Make sure I don't do the same door a second time. Yeah, I skimmed through that part of the playthrough.
If it's fun stuff to do before you get to the door, then that would be fun. But it's not that much fun to do. It's not like running down and you get to go through a cool thing and roll through something and it's fun and then go through a door. No, it's like the same thing, and it's just jump. It's like wall jumping up there. I don't know. I found a lot of the alternate exits and stuff in this game, though. Like, I thought it was cool to there was actually different ways through the world. So if you found an alternate exit, led to a different world, and then you could shortcut stuff. But there wasn't too much of that. It's not like Super Mario World where you unlock a whole other path. And then there's another path on top of that. There's no like Star World in this game, you know. There's no Star Road, basically.
Essentially, at the first level of each, after you defeat a boss, there's a secret exit in usually those. Maybe the first or second level after you defeat a boss, there's a secret exit in those, and then that's where the paths branch off. So you can either do the next two or three levels in this path, or the next two or three levels in that path. You could backtrack and unlock everything, but there's no like completionist bonus for doing that. It's not like getting all the levels is going to give you a secret ending or anything like that. At least I don't think. Yeah, so there's not much of a reason to do it, except if you really like the levels and you want to see more, because the levels are they're well varied. There's a lot of unique stuff with it. Unlike the levels being so varied, I would say the music is pretty repetitive.
Oh my gosh. After like three levels of that Tiny Toons theme song, I was like, please, something else.
Yep. It feels like they pick like the first, like they'll have a theme and then they'll repeat the theme for three levels. And then they'll change the theme to something else, but then they'll still repeat that new theme for three levels. And then by the time you get to like the second boss, they at least have different music for like the woods and the caves and like the Himalayas and then the volcano and stuff like that. But like but you still hear that Tiny Toons theme a lot. And as much as I like them, I like the music itself, just not how repetitive it is. Like, it's obnoxious at that point. As much as I like the sounds they used for the music and the sound effects, actually, I think the sound effects are really fun in this. It just does not work. It grates on you so much. And specifically, the end, when you beat a level, that and it just...
I was just happy to beat the level at that point.
Yeah.
like some of these levels are like, I'm looking at my notes and one of them's like the sixth level in World 3. I was like, I hate this level. I do like the goat. There was a cool ghost ship level that was really cool.
That was another one of those maze levels too, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, you have to like circle the whole way around it. And then there's also a part where like if you fall down that you have to start over. It's like, oh, gosh, like people don't do that kind of stuff anymore. I'm kind of glad they don't make levels like that, but that's par for the course. If you're a retro gamer,
you're always going to run it. I mean, and that, I think that's one of the reasons why we're kind of breaking games down like this, though, where it's like you can look at what things were like at the time and be like, all right, this is actually like for the time, this game is pretty decent. Like this is an above average game, especially for its time. Looking back on it now, it doesn't quite hold up nearly as well as my nostalgia like props it up.
Way worse games during this period.
Like, oh, 100%.
Way worse. Like this is like competent. It's not broken. It's kind of like they couldn't decide if they wanted to be like Sonic or if they wanted to be like Donkey Kong Country. So it's like a little of both and not enough of each. Like basically that's what the game is to me, you know?
I feel like if what really would have made the game a lot better is if they dropped their Sonic influence from it. And it's not to say Sonic is bad. It's just that I feel like correcting the controls and those mechanics would have been a lot easier of a fix than having to retool all the levels in the entire game to fit the Sonic control style, to fit a Sonic play style. I feel like if they would have taken the Sonic controls out of it and kind of went with a Donkey Kong Country or a Mario style control or Mario style physics, it would have been so much better, because it takes so long to get any kind of momentum. And when you finally do get momentum, you get hit by a rodent or something like that, like some angry enemy. Though you can slide, I did see that a lot. Like, but that's also assuming you generally you're going so fast, you know, that blast processing is really cranking out those pixels, where you don't. But you're going so fast, you can't see the enemies coming. Like you said, off screen, it gives you a blind hit. And so unless you know they're coming and you know to slide and do a slide tackle on them or something, you're going to get hit, and then you're going to lose your health, and then you're just going to be mad because the sound effect is actually really like it gets annoying after a while. Like when you get hit, at least for me, maybe it's just part of the rage inducing parts of it from a childhood. I don't know. What do you agree with me on that?
I don't remember it being that grating. It just, you know, it's Genesis. I love like certain games in the Genesis, but there's certain developers that didn't get good at using the sound chip. FM synthesis. You know? Yeah. And there's great stuff in this game, and then there's other stuff that's not so great. But, you know, overall, I got to say it wasn't the worst game I ever played, but it's definitely not the best either. You know, it's like, it's, I love the graphics, and I think the characters looked amazing in it. And it was good. Like, I wouldn't have gone out of my way to play this if you would have said, oh, let's, like, I want to do Buster's Hidden Treasure. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I wasn't that excited. And then I played, and I'm like, this isn't that good. And then, you know, I got into it, and the graphics are great. And it's, I always like, I'm learning so much right now, too, with game design. And this was definitely like there's good ideas in here. And then there's some ideas that it's like, I will never do this. I'll never put this in a level.
One thing I wanted to comment on, though, you're saying you love the sprite work and you love the animations. One of the animations we didn't talk about, but I really love, is there a lot of levels, there are these iron poles, these iron rods that either span across trees, either perfectly horizontal,
oh, yeah,
or like a 45 degree angle. And when they're perfectly horizontal and Buster's walking across, his panicked expression of like his exasperated expression, like, oh my gosh, this is hard, is really fun. And when he slides down the angle one, he crisscrosses his ears over top of it and holds them and holds like on the other side and uses that to hold himself up as he slides down. Like, it's really fun.
Yeah, they really super charming. Did
so. Yeah, it's great. It's so fun to watch. It's unfortunate that I guess what the things that still appeal to me about this game are, as much as the level design is a problem for its controls, I still like it because of how many secrets are in there and how many secrets are you can find. I like the verticality of these stages a lot because there's almost always an upper path and a lower path, and sometimes three paths, upper, lower, middle. And that's definitely like a Sonic influence, I think, is good. Because it makes exploration of the stages a lot more interesting, a lot more fun, and it guarantees like no one person is going to most likely like play the game the same way. So I really like that. But where it kind of suffers is that since it does have the Sonic controls of having to wait to build up speed, it gets very, it's not floaty, but it gets very like choppy.
It's like start and stoppy. Like it's,
yes,
you have to, like, you're trying to get going and then you get stopped, and then it's like the last levels in Sonic where you're not running at all, you're just making sure you're not running into stuff, basically. And that's exactly kind of what this game is like. You know, it's like there's like one level that really made me upset, because you get through the whole level and then you're coming, I think it's one of the mountain levels, you go through the whole level, and then at the end, you're running downhill, like you're running down a long hill, and then you jump, and you go down another long hill, and you jump, and then you go down another long hill, and then there's an enemy at the end. It's like, they're such jerks. Like at that point in the level, like just run to the end. You know what I mean? Like you went through hell. Like this is your reward to like just run down a hill because it's fun, you know? And they're so mean to you sometimes in this game.
It's that old game design, man. That's what it is. I agree with you. For its time, it's fine. I think as a kid, a lot of this is clouded by nostalgia, but the things that I still do genuinely like, and they still make me feel the same way I did as a kid, is that exploration of the levels. I think the exploration specifically is really well done. There's so many hidden areas you can go to, and the platforming can be really challenging in a good way, at times, and a lot of times, like we mentioned before, blind jumps and enemies that pop out of nowhere, they can be very frustrating. Specifically, one enemy that I despise are the purple bats in the forest. I don't know what it is about them, but I cannot, like, I get hit by them so often. It makes me so mad.
There was another level, like in the cave. You went through a bunch of caves, and then you got to a lava area, and you're jumping straight up. All you're doing is going straight up and just timing your jumps. And it's kind of like one of those escape levels, like the end of Bionic Commando, where you're trying to get out before the time runs out. But this is like you're being chased by lava rising. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to get to that level because you have to you have to literally memorize it, and you have to get really good at the jumps. Because like you said, there's like the mechanics, Buster, like when he drops almost straight down really quickly, you know? So there's not like any kind of like inertia to carry him forward as soon as you press let go of the jump button. So it's more like a dropping game than a jumping game. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's more like you're trying to drop onto things. And that's what that whole lava chase was like. It was like you're just trying to like make sure that you're just hitting it enough to not over jump. As soon as you over jump, like you get hit by the lava. There's no, you have to make perfect jumps the whole way up. So that was interesting.
I just keep going back to this. I think if they would have fixed the controls a little bit, because I actually think like the way they designed the platforms for the jumping mechanics, like especially in the first couple stages, is perfect. Like if you notice there's like that top path where there's like, you can either walk along the ground, platforms. But the top path is like platform, 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 platform. But you can see every platform. You can see the jumps, and they make it progressively harder by making the platform smaller. But it's still very easy to control Buster to land on them. That's perfect for the control scheme they have. Problem is that they don't stick to that, and they try. And it's good that they don't stick to that. You need to iterate. You need to spice things up. But they ruin it later on.
But like the jerks they are in that first level, you only have one chance to jump on those platforms. And if you don't know where you're going, you don't have a second chance. They don't regenerate. So
really,
yeah, it's they're so mean to you in that game. It's like the ones that fall don't regenerate. There's other platforms that do. That don't fall.
I've had them regenerate for me though. Like I would fall, go back up the way I came, and they'd be back.
Yeah, not for me. They would
really
wouldn't regenerate. Yeah, I was like, that's such bad design. Like, why do you have to go through the whole level again just to try to get go to the alternate path? You know.
Yeah.
It says, but, like, world one. Not a fan of falling blocks that don't regenerate. Is my note.
I didn't have that problem. I remember them regenerating, but who knows? Regardless, though, even if whether they do or they don't, depending on you played it more recently than I did. I actually did play it a lot earlier this week, but I didn't have that issue. But at the same, I don't know.
I kind of want to go back and try again, but like I just remember making that note because I was like, oh man, what a it's interesting. I have a feeling that this was like an assignment that the team might not have been big fans of the cartoon, and they wanted to make something fun, and they kind of, maybe they got halfway through and then got the Sonic note or something. I don't know. Like, or maybe they set out for it to be Sonic and Donkey Kong Country, and then the level design just didn't kind of work with that. Maybe it was like the wrong level designer or something. I don't know. Like, but it's not bad. I mean, I could recommend this game if you're a big Tiny Toons fan. Like, it should be part of your play through all the Tiny Toons game. You know?
It's got a lot of character. It's well designed enough to warrant a playthrough, but there is lots of frustrations. And I think, and you brought them up, like there's a lot of issues with the blind jumps and the enemies coming out of nowhere, and just the running levels where you have to run fast, but the jumping, like if you run into a wall once, you're screwed, but you have to still move quickly. So it's not like you can run and stop because it takes so long to start up again. It's just, there's problems with it.
If anyone wants to play through this game, like you can get through the whole game by just jumping normally without the running, except for one level. And that's that one level in the mountains. Like you have to figure out how to run. You have to memorize where to jump, and you have to time your runs and jumps perfectly to hit the platforms. Cause you're running across spikes. It's all just a couple very narrow platforms across spikes, and you have to like land on it and then run across them as they're moving. And that's the only part that's not fun. And then there's another part towards the end too, where there's a factory that you're in at the end, and you're going up diagonally up like stairs that are spikes basically. And you have to jump on the stair before the spikes come up. And there's ones that are vertical and ones that are horizontal. You can jump on the horizontal ones, but if they go back in and you fall down, and they'll immediately come back out and kill you with one shot. So it's not like you have to just get, you have to memorize that. There's just parts you have to memorize to get through it. And you know, the door maze at the end, and then you get to Elmira, and that's memorizing the running.
Yep.
But at the very end, though, like I thought Monty was really easy. Like you just basically do a wall jump onto his head, and you know, once you get used to it, it's pretty easy to figure out like the mechanics.
The playthrough I saw, like you have to dot, like all the person had to do was dodge Monty's first attack, which I think his first phase is like a laser, and then the second one is like this weird, like his gauntlet his fist shoots off. But once you hit him, you run to the other side of the map, and he'll jump over to meet you, but he doesn't touch the wall. So as long as you're touching, like as far to the right as possible, as far to the left as possible, he'll jump, land right beside you and not hit you. You wall jump, land on his head before he can do anything, and then you do the same thing, run to the other side. Yeah. Now
you don't even have to run to the other side. You could literally stay on the same side. Like he'll just land where you are, or if you're close enough to the right or the left side, he'll just like land still to the right side. But when you are playing that, don't go up totally against the wall, because you won't be able to execute your wall jump. The timing won't work. So you want to be like at least like, you know, half 8 pixels away from it or something. Like
yeah, of, yeah.
Like half you a grid or whatever away from it, you know.
All right, but that should do it for this episode. I think we've talked about that. I mean, we've broken down this game. We've talked about our problems with it, the things that I gushed enough about my nostalgia for it. I'm pretty content with how much nostalgia I could infuse into this. So overall, recommended-ish. It's fun, but it's still got problems. So with all that said, Gabe, where can the good people find you online, and what is there anything you would like to promote?
I am currently making a game. It's still like not say it's not shared yet. But I'm making that on itch.io. If you follow me on itch.io, there's like you can see my Life in the Analog Age game there, and I'll post updates when I do get the new game up. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Gabe_Swore, and then also like I have a Patreon. You can support me, and if you go to the Patreon, you can see like updates to the game and stuff there too. It's a platformer. It's gonna be fun, and it's like very right now I'm in a very technical, frustrating part, but about to get through it, and you know, hopefully trying to get the game done to get in time to play it on the Analog Pocket, because that's my goal right now. It's just to make a game for the Analog Pocket.
You got a pre-order in for that too, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I was one of those guys that was like sniping it because I had to. I always wanted the perfect Game Boy, and that is like, it's like a Game Boy and a Switch together. You dock it. It's amazing. It's going to be amazing. So
it looks so like that. I didn't have the money, so I didn't make a point to go get it. But like the fact that you can play Game Gear games, and you can, there's add-ons to let you play, you know, Neo Geo Pocket, and I think WonderSwan even, right? I think WonderSwan can be played on it too.
TurboGrafx, it'll be the TurboGrafx ones too. So it's going to be great. I mean, they'll jailbreak it. You could probably play like NES games and stuff on it. It's going to be like the ultimate portable system. It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited for it. I can't help it.
As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can email me, stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, the easiest way to do that is give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use to listen to the show. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And the most important shout out I have is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. And that will do it for this episode of Still Loading. Thank you all for listening. One last thing before we go, Gabe will return. We don't know when, we don't know where, we don't know which game yet, but he will be back, and we're going to do another cartoon-based video game. So, Gabe, thank you for joining me, and I'm excited for whatever we end up recording next.
Yes, thanks for having me. It's been great, and thanks for introducing me to this game, because I don't know if I would have actually sat down and played through it if it wasn't for you, and it's interesting to see like how the game is through your nostalgic eyes too.
I don't know if you should be thanking me after I heard all that. I don't know how much you enjoyed it, but thank you for playing it though, and thank you for joining me. This was a lot of fun.
It was great.
And that should do it. So thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.